On this week's show, we've got some reselling news from the post office, Amazon, and Mercari, and I will update you on the case of that expensive African mask. What is up, Galaxians? Welcome to episode number 231 of the Galaxy CDs Rocks and Flips Reseller Talk Podcast. My name is Ryan, and first off, let me wish you all a very Merry Christmas. I hope you had a terrific holiday selling season, and more importantly, I hope you had a terrific holiday with your friends and family. Mine was outstanding. In both cases, actually. Great time with family on Christmas Eve day. Christmas Eve day, and then today, Christmas Day, pretty low-key. Did a little work, did a little laundry, and just kind of chilling and recording this show for all of you. With that said, let's jump right in to this reselling news.
News updates.
So as I reported on this show probably 6 or 7 weeks ago, there are some changes coming to shipping prices from all of the carriers as we roll into the first of the year. And Mercari just announced that they are also going to be, as a result of that, implementing some changes in their shipping prices. And some of them are actually going to be pretty good news. So this message came out via email from Mercari late last week. Each year, shipping and delivery carriers review their pricing and make rate adjustments to account for cost fluctuations, inflation, and demand. Since carrier rates are changing, shipping fees for Mercari prepaid labels are also changing for certain weights. This will go into effect on January 18th of next year. They highlight some good news. This year, Mercari rate changes include some price decreases for certain shipping weights, like, for instance, $6.99 for 1 pound, which will be down from $7.40, and $3.99 from a quarter pound, down from $4.30. There is a link in that email to the total new and old rate tables, and I will provide a link for that in the article and the show notes down below. They say this is what you need to know. These new shipping rates for prepaid labels are in effect on January 18th. The new rates will apply to all new listings and will apply if you update your shipping on existing listings for both buyer and seller paid labels. You do not need to take any action to update shipping on any existing listing. So this will automatically go into place. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to make edits. If you do make edits after that date, the rate changes will automatically apply. Starting January 18th, existing listings posted before that date with buyer paid shipping will automatically update with new shipping prices. They note that it may take up to 2 weeks for changes to apply to existing listings with buyer paid shipping. I personally have not ever had that issue. Things went into effect almost immediately. I think this clause that they put out every time they make rate changes is just to cover their tails in case something does go wrong with the update. But I personally have not ever experienced any issues where a buyer underpaid shipping on the limited number of items that I offer customer paid shipping over on Mercari. All Mercari prepaid labels, they remind you, cover nationwide shipping and peak surcharges throughout the year and come with the added value of up to $200 in shipping protection and free returns. So again, be aware that in mid-January, there are going to be shipping price changes pretty much from all the carriers. The big one is the United States Postal Service, which is implementing rate changes across the board. Priority, first class, well, what used to be first class package and is now ground advantage, and particularly in media mail, where once again, there is a pretty significant jump coming in January. Over at Amazon, we've talked over the last few weeks about some changes going on at Amazon with their inventory levels and inventory control for the sellers that are using FBA. This article over on eCommerce Bytes points out that they have now added a new metric designed to help sellers avoid this new FBA low inventory fee. Amazon introduced a new metric to help sellers who use its FBA fulfillment services avoid a new fee that will go into effect in the new year. This new low inventory fee will apply if a product's inventory levels relative to historical demand is below 28 days. So what they're essentially saying there is if they look at your sales history, and let's say over that time you normally sell 20 of a particular item, and your inventory falls below that 20 historical rate, that's when this new fee kicks in, because Amazon is saying essentially that they, at that point, will no longer necessarily be able to offer fast, timely shipping and delivery to customers, or to have the items in the correct warehouse for the customers. So that's why they claim they're implementing that fee. This new metric announced this week, designed to help sellers better manage their inventory to help avoid that fee in Amazon's announcement. They wrote, quote, "We've launched a new minimum inventory level metric to help FBA sellers plan inventory levels more effectively, improve delivery speeds, and help them to avoid recently announced low inventory level fee. We leveraged advanced machine learning models to analyze demand forecasts and replenishment settings and recommend the minimum number of units per product that you should have on hand in our fulfillment centers. Maintaining inventory above the minimum inventory level helps you meet customer demand and offer faster delivery speeds, as products can be distributed across local fulfillment centers closer to customers. Remember, if you have Amazon do that, there is a charge for them to do that for you too, so you're not fully escaping all of the new Amazon fees, but this new metric should at least help you manage your inventory. Sellers who maintain units above the minimum inventory level see a 15% increase in sales over a four-week period on average, though, of course, actual results may vary. So I assume this is a metric that you would need to check with some great regularity, probably weekly. If you have a lot of items, that could be a bit of a chore, but at least there is now a new metric over on Amazon to help you avoid that fee and, in theory, carry the appropriate inventory levels at the appropriate warehouses to generate additional sales. The United States Postal Service is opening some new sorting and delivery centers, and that approach is coming under some fire. The United States Postmaster has implemented a lot of changes. He's closed distribution centers. He's opening new ones. They're closing some facilities and changing sorting machines. There's been a lot of stuff going on. As I have talked about here, both this year and last year, my personal experience is that the service level for the post office, particularly in media mail, which is where I ship probably 95% of my items, has improved over the course of the last 2 years. I mentioned, I think in the last episode, I have not had any packages this year delayed or missing using USPS, which is the first time that I can remember that's happened during the holiday season. So take all of this with a pinch of salt. I know all of this stuff has been fairly controversial, but it seems, at least in my personal case, to be working. The United States Postal Service is opening new sorting and delivery centers in January and February of next year, calling them an integral part of its Delivering for America plan to create a best-in-class processing and delivery network. In their announcement, they wrote the following: "The SNDCs will revitalize our network of nearly 19,000 delivery units, the last stop for mail and packages before they are delivered by our carriers. The Postal Service has targeted key markets where it is beneficial to aggregate delivery units into fewer, larger, centrally located SNDCs, leveraging both repurposed and, in some cases, new facilities to simplify the entire network and create a more reliable and efficient," and the sentence ends there, which is terrible. The United States Postal Service said the opening of the new sorting and delivery centers would not impose post office closures, and it said the closures would not result in any changes for customers with regard to their local post office and retail NPO services. Now, I can tell you again from personal experience, my local post office closed their delivery function, gosh, probably 18 months ago. It is now a retail counter only, and I've seen no disruption in service. As far as I know, nobody was laid off. They just centralized the delivery of a couple of zip codes into a central office downtown where I live and turned a couple of the smaller post offices into retail counters. And as far as I can tell, there's been no change in service and no one was let go. That has, however, been called into question by a postal expert, a guy named Steve Hutkins, who publishes the Save the Post Office website. In a November 13th, 2023 article, he wrote about one of the first new sorting centers set to open in January. "The centralization of letter carriers in Pompano Beach, Florida, won't just impact the 450 carriers who will be relocated. The five post offices also have about 80 customer service clerks, processing clerks, managers, supervisors, and custodial workers. Some of these positions will also transition to the new SNDC, and some will remain behind to manage the retail operations in the post offices," which is kind of what I just described happened in my local post office. He notes, however, many of these jobs will become unnecessary due to the consolidation of operations and the use of the new sorting machines in the SNDC. These employees will be what they call excess. They'll have to find another postal job and most likely outside of the Pompano Beach area. He was quoted in an article last Friday where he told the Guardian newspaper that the drastic network changes at the United States Postal Service under DeJoy are occurring with little transparency and oversight, especially given the impacts of the changes. Again, my personal experience, and if you're watching on YouTube, you can let me know in the comments below what your experiences have been. My personal experiences have been that despite all of the controversy and all of the pushback on this and the fact that people didn't think it would work, it seems to actually be working. Now, in terms of impacts on local postal workers, I can't really comment on that beyond what I've seen in my local area, which is a lot of folks were relocated, in my case, to a downtown office, which was less than 2 miles from the local branch. For me, that just made good sense. It was one less stop for the mail along the way. It all went into one central place instead of going there and then going out to these regional little hubs. So I don't personally have any issue with any of this. And the service seems to be working okay. So again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can let me know down in the comments below what you think of that. This last bit of news, you may recall back in October, I did an episode on kind of the ethical points of reselling and at what point does a profit become too excessive where the seller or the person who purchased it and then resold an item maybe has crossed a line. This was in reference to the sale of a rare African mask that a antique store had purchased from an elderly couple and then sold for millions of dollars. That couple took this seller to court and sued them, and last week they lost. The elderly couple lose rare African mask case worth millions. A secondhand dealer has won a case to keep the 4.2 million euros, which was 3.6 million pounds or $4.6 million for those of you keeping score at home, from the sale of a rare African mask he found in an elderly French couple's attic. He had been brought in to help clear the attic for the couple who sold him the mask for 150 euros, which equates to about 165 US dollars. The couple sued, arguing that they had been misled about the item's value. The judge, however, disagreed, saying they had failed to appreciate the artwork's true worth, which was kind of the point I came down on after all of my ramblings about this thing. With all the tools that are available to people, and I realized these folks were elderly, their kids didn't really help them out on this. There are ways to get second opinions on things, and they went with this one, and it obviously did not work out for them. The rare Najil mask made by the Fang people of Gabon is believed to be one of only about 10 in the world. This 19th century wooden mask was probably acquired, quote, in unknown circumstances, unquote, around 1917 by René Victor Edward Maurice Fournier, a French colonial governor and the plaintiff's grandfather. It was held in the family's possession until it was sold to the dealer. It was later resold at auction to an unknown buyer. The couple, of course, went to court to claim a share of the proceeds of the sale, alleging that the dealer had misled them about the true value of the mask. The dealer, for his part, denied knowing that it was so valuable and said he had demonstrated goodwill by offering the couple 300,000 euros, which was the mask's initial valuation. So he essentially offered to give them, as you may recall from that previous episode, he had gotten several opinions on the value of this mask, and 300,000 was one of those, and he offered that to the couple because that was the highest original valuation he got. When this thing went to auction, it ultimately sold for several times that number, and he was willing to essentially pay them what everybody seemed to think was the item's original actual value prior to the auction just going crazy. His lawyer argued the couple had failed to research the item's true worth before selling it. When you've got such an item at home, he said, you should be a bit more cautious before giving it up. The lawyer said the judge ruled in favor of the dealer and said the couple had failed to exercise due diligence in evaluating, quote, the historical and artistic value of the mask. That €300,000 offer was retracted, of course, after the couple sued. So the courts kind of came down on our side as resellers. Which was my contention, and a lot of you in the comments on that particular episode felt the same way. If you and an owner of an item agree on a price and a value, that's kind of the end of it. And at that point, if I'm able to go out and sell it for a significant profit, that's the way the cookie crumbles, essentially. So, again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can let me know what you think of that outcome down in the comments below. And, of course, if you're just listening to the podcast, you can email me at galaxycds@gmail.com. With that, let's get into what's going to be a fairly brief What Sold segment. It was actually a fairly busy week last week. It was 80-some listings sold. If you're following me on Instagram when I posted my weekly recap, it was better than the week before, not as good as several weeks ago, but still reasonably solid. But there were not a lot of big items. There was a lot of little sub-$20 stuff, which I generally don't talk about here, the bread and butter of my business. As those of you who have been following me for a while know, it's kind of stuff in that $12 to $15 range. And then what I bring you in this show are kind of the big hitters, things that are of relatively higher value. This first item, Montgomery County, Ohio History, 1989. It was a genealogy, business, and family history book, illustrated hardcover. I picked this up at a estate sale up in the Dayton area. Gosh, probably a month or a month and a half ago for $2. This sold on eBay for $21.99 plus shipping. I tend to pick up most of these like local historical books, especially if I can get them for a dollar or two, because there are not, generally speaking, a lot of them in circulation. Obviously, the target audience is typically quite small. It's people who either are currently living in that area or lived there at some point in the past or had relatives that lived there who might want to acquire a piece of that local history. So this doesn't have like necessarily worldwide appeal, but there will be a buyer eventually for these, and they generally bring in kind of this maybe $18 to $40 range. So again, if it's something that you see out there and you can get it for a buck or two and you're interested in picking up some books, this might be a good one to look for. Sale over on Etsy. This was an interesting book from the 1940s, Firefighting, A Complete Treatise by Ernest Williams, published in 1941, a six-printing illustrated hardcover. Was not in fantastic shape. The binding was splitting. The pages were fairly worn and yellowed, but it was a really unusual book, kind of a textbook on firefighting techniques of the era. I had it listed for $37.99. It sold as part of my 10% off sale for $34.19. This is an item that was acquired in a big lot of books for less than 5 cents. Religious books, again, seemingly every week, we've got at least one of these. Inspiration and Ideals, Thoughts for Every Day by Grenville Kleiser from 1917. It was an 11th edition hardcover. This was acquired in part of a big lot of religious books and artifacts that I picked up several months ago for $2. It sold on eBay for $34.99 plus shipping. Again, your weekly reminder, if you stumble on a lot of religious texts, it's probably worth giving them a look. Here's another one. This was an estate sale pickup. I own this for less than a dollar. I did a pretty big buy at a sale, gosh, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, well over 100 books that they sold me for like $75. So this is under a dollar cost of goods sold. Ellen G. White, Present Truth and a Review and Herald Articles, Volume 1. This was published in 1962. It was a hardcover that essentially were copies of articles that Ellen, who is a Seventh-day Adventist, had written from the late 1800s into the early 1900s. Really cool book. Not a lot of them out there. This was in fantastic condition. As near as I could tell, it had never even been opened. I mean, it was in immaculate condition. I had it listed for $59.99 or best offer. Got a watcher, sent out a 15% offer on eBay and sold it for $50.99 plus medium mail shipping. I picked up at that sale a bunch of Ellen G. White publications and writings, and they are all selling at a reasonably decent pace, anywhere from about $10 or $12 up to this at a little over $50. So if you're, again, out and about and see some Ellen G. White stuff, especially vintage, like things published before, say, the 1960s, they might be worth taking a look at. And this, I think, is the flip of the week this week. Again, a pretty slow week in terms of big hitters. This is a book that was also part of that big 5 cent lot, The Anti-Diet, The New Pleasure Power Way to Lose Weight by Lynn Donovan. This was a first printing, I think, from the early 1970s. fairly scarce to find in its original first printing hardcover with its dust jacket. This was an ex-library version, so it did have some library markings. It had one of those Brodart Mylar covers on it, so it was in reasonably good shape. I had it listed for $69.99 or best offer. I received an offer actually from the United Kingdom from a customer on this for $66 plus shipping and went ahead and sent this thing on its way. So that is the extent of the bigger items that sold last week. Like I said, the week was actually pretty good. I am still trending for a best ever December. If you're watching on YouTube, you can let me know how your December is going. I've had some feedback over on Instagram, again, at GalaxyCDsRocks, that most people seem to be having a fairly decent holiday. Most of the reports that I see from kind of the major retailers and so on are that things have been pretty good. Have not heard a lot from the platforms, as we've talked about over the last few episodes, that who were projecting weaker than expected fourth quarter results. So it'll be interesting to see when they report early next year what their fourth quarter looked like. With that, my friends, I am going to put a wrap on it because it's Christmas Day and this is quite enough. Once again, as always, if you got something out of this, if you could do me a favor, if you're watching on YouTube and hit that thumbs up button, if you're not currently a follower of the podcast or a subscriber to the YouTube channel, you can consider doing that as well. I would appreciate it. And as always, if you would share this with any of your like-minded reselling friends that you think might get something out of it, that would be awesome as well. I hope everybody had a terrific Christmas. Thanks, as always, for sharing a little bit of your day with me. And now, it's time to sell. Thanks, guys.
You have been listening to the Galaxy CDs Rocks and Flips Reseller Talk podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you again next time.